Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of the Software Crafts podcast. My name is João and I'm your host. Today with us we have Leah Kovac-Beckham. Leah is an independent UX design consultant with a focus on user research and strategy. Together with product teams, she has for many years developed digital services and tools for leading Swedish media companies like Swedish Television and Bonnier News. She enjoys working closely with journalists, an environment where you are rewarded for asking questions. Essential to her work is bringing different perspectives and skill sets together in all parts of the work process in reaching a common set goal, both in discovery and delivery. She is experienced that the whole team approach mindset is more innovative, effective, and exciting. It enables you to learn about, understand, and affect areas that would otherwise be out of reach and comprehension. Leah continues to explore the whole team approach and shares her experiences at conferences and gatherings as a speaker and facilitator. She also has published articles on cross-functional team mob programming. Welcome to the show, Leah, and thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So with I think that the heuristic matches your bio, right? And the heuristic for today is very short, two words. Be curious. How do you approach curiosity?
Well, I did get a bit, I got really interested in this heuristic, and I know that the basics of curiosity, but then I found also that it's not all good. It's actually a double-edged sword with a potential dark side, which actually got me curious. So what is this dark side? Most of our benefits, but there is another side of this, which was that curious people, you say that curious people are not really bored, but it's, you can also say that curious people are really good at not being bored. And what they do is to get out of boredom, they take risks to just get out of there. And this is also the reason why you create innovation. So it's a good thing when you can actually get out of there and when it's non-destructive, but it can also be destructive if you don't have the ability to get out. So in our digital age, a lot of people are, as soon as they feel just a tiny bit of boredom, they go to their phone. Their phone is always there, and they check out social medias and whatever. And this is perhaps not what is intended for, where it's good. Perhaps before, when we didn't have this opportunity to always have excitement and like in our phone, we had to actually do something like to get away some really innovative thing. For me, I was really, really shy when I was little, but since I was also very curious, I was more curious than I was afraid, so I could get away from my insecurity and shyness with the help of curiosity, and then it's really good. That's why I think it's a double-edged sword. Yep. And it's interesting to explore both of the sides and how you can use them.
Yeah, you are challenging me, right? Because I never thought about these or having a conversation about the sides, the light side and dark side of curiosity, right? And but the way that you put that out, especially now in digital age, that we have several computers with us, right? Smartwatch and cell phone and tablets and everything, right? At least on this side of the world, and the risk of getting bored, and the connection to innovation. So that was very interesting. And then I see that you touch into points. You talk about individual, but then also you, I think that you give a need for innovation that goes towards the teams, right? To be innovative, because I believe that although there are individuals that are innovative, I think that we cross that threshold that we need more people to be curious, right? To really innovate. What is your perception on that?
Yes, curiosity is very powerful when it comes to collaboration, in my point of view. To not be just curious about all kinds of things, but also be curious about your team members, your team members' skills, which is very important in collaboration. And this is also where you you can use your curiosity to learn new skills, or at least have as much knowledge that you can ask good questions to your teammates. And this goes to also what I, or not just I, it's an old term, it calls the broken comb people. Broken comb people, it's like an involvement from T-shaped people. So instead of just the T with one specialized skill and very general skills, you have the broken comb, which is you have like perhaps something you master, but you also have skills in other areas. And these other areas are the ones that help you collaborate with other people. And also when you can do this, you can also connect dots and see patterns that you would not seen as, otherwise. And curiosity is the thing, or it motivates you to take in other skills and abilities, which I think is very important. And well, I could go on like how you do this, for instance, like asking questions. But I don't know if you have a question for me in this.
Yeah, we can have the follow-up, right? Because I was wondering, right, how do we put a team of people that all of them are curious when we have lots of questions, right? People are really curious and asking lots of questions. Could be helpful in discovery phases, but how that can affect the delivery phase, right? As you say in your bio, you like to work with both this, discovery and delivery. What are the trade-offs of asking lots of questions in discovery phases versus lots of questions on delivery phase? What is your experience there?
I believe that in the discovery phase, you ask questions to understand and find and understand the opportunity or problem. So you have to understand that and then sort of choose which problems to focus on. And then you go on to, okay, so how should we solve it? But as you know, there are so many solutions to one problem, which is the one, the right solution. So you have to ask questions again, like, should we build it this way or that way? Should we do something with the architecture before we do it? Is this, so I think asking questions sort of all the time, but it's also, I think it's important to the way you ask questions. So it's not that you're questioning someone's decisions. It's more like asking questions to actually understand. Because if you show interest in your, for instance, if I work with the developers, if I show interest in their work, they will most likely also include me in their work. And perhaps it works quite well to ask questions like, okay, so when you do this, what's your thought on that? And they might, when they actually explain it to me, they themselves sometimes like, oh, I haven't thought about that. Oh, yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, we should probably look at that. So it's not questioning the decision. It's more like when you ask someone to explain, you help the team themselves, the team members themselves get even better solutions or decisions. So I think there's always, it's a really superpower to use questions.
Definitely it is. Definitely it is. And I see myself, right? Even sometimes when I explain something out loud, that in my head that idea makes sense. But when I explain something out loud, I go, aha, there is some flaw here. So that is interesting. And also my follow-up question is, because you work as a UX consultant, so not only you have your area of expertise, you see a lot of different environments and challenges. It's your perception that with regards to software and teams that create software, we collaborate more than we collaborate 5 or 10 years ago?
Definitely, at least from my perspective. I've been in different areas. Many years ago, I was working in an agency, like an advertising agency. And although it was collaborative, it was most often handoffs. And it was more like someone decided something, came up with an idea, and that's it. You didn't really collaborate to make it better. But today in software development, which is also where I really love to work in software development, is that you collaborate and you iterate, you make it better, and you experiment, you learn. And it's so, at least in my sort of world, it's okay to fail, because that's actually sort of a proof that you tried something, that you dare to try something, take a risk, and learn. So I think for me it's a huge difference between now and 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, so I was just checking. It's. I think that a common trend with the guests on this podcast, they see that there's some patterns occurring, and also I think that you mentioned an important thing in the environments that you work. It's okay to fail. We also could frame it's okay to learn, right? Since everything is bounded and there is no dangerous for people. How curiosity and culture goes end to end, or how it's your experience of one influence the other, and how that goes?
How it influences, can you repeat the question?
Yes, so you were talking about your current experience, right? The environment where you are, it's okay to fail, and then we learn, and then we move together. So we do some assumptions, try something out, didn't quite had the results or the impact that we expect, learn from it and continue to adapt. So I can see a culture of continuous improvement, right? And my question is how curiosity plays a role in this type of culture, or if it doesn't play a role, or, you know, or a third answer, and what is your experience with that regard?
I believe that curiosity in the context I am, it's essential, and it's rewarded to be curious and learn new things, then try things. We have like at Swedish Television, we have weeks in the beginning of the year and also in like in August where you have 2 weeks where you can do basically anything, learn something, experiment something, and you work with different people, not your team. And that's how I learned things like comm technology or bot design, artificial intelligence. I mean, it's a lot of things. And when you are curious, because I mean, it's not that And not everyone actually likes to do this. They sort of more, they're sort of comfortable in just working their usual work. But if you, but since it is sort of rewarded to do this at my workplace, I think it's, I mean, I think it's interesting because there came out so, I mean, really great things during the, these 2 weeks every, it's actually then 4 weeks every year that really got the development, I mean, the, yeah, the development forward. And those are the things that also are the basis for further work. So that's one thing that curiosity is really rewarded and really helps us to move forward and experiment. Curiosity is also, since it's sort of, when you're curious, you're not that afraid of change, I'd say. So, and since we live in a world where it's constantly changing, I mean, it's always been changing, but perhaps now it's changing in a sort of different way. And the, since the curiosity is such a motivator, you can bear change better. But that's what it, what I believe, at least. And well, it's difficult not to be afraid of change in our world. So that's also where curiosity helps. It helps also, of course, with all the skills that since it is changing all the time, you need to learn new things. You need to adapt your knowledge. You always have to learn and relearn, of course. So every time when in my work as a UX designer, we do experiments. We interview, we observe, we learn new things. And then, let's say 6 months later, we learn something new that's totally, well, the, all the things that we learned before was actually not really true anymore. So you have to relearn. I usually say that the truth is not fixed. It's sort of more floating. It's only true at this moment, but... Well, you have the classic, of course, that the world, the Earth isn't flat, it's actually round. But I mean, it was, they probably had some proof of that it was flat in the beginning. And but then they came to new knowledge that, oh, no, it's round. And who knows, maybe we know something different in the future. So this is also very good when with the curiosity, because if you're not curious, you're not eager to learn and like re-evaluate what you have learned. So that those are at least some of the ways I use curiosity and have seen curiosity in my work life.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing part of your trajectory and your career, right? And how things change, and the mechanisms or the ways that you exploit curiosity to learn. And I also believe that as software becomes more ubiquitous, right, and be the center of new digital innovation, the rate of change went up. Right, especially when we unlock cloud and the cost of ownership decreases, so open up other avenues. And I'm curious, because I'm not a UXer, I work with UXers, but I'm not on the UXer community. You talk about change. What did change in the UXer community? What were the practices or the bridges or the things that changed in the last decade?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, there are some things that don't change, like in user experience, when you connect two things, if two things are close together, you will see them as a group. Those are more like cognitive aspects of UX. Those don't change. That's a human thing. But those other changes are... Well, in software, it can be anything from, let's say I have to have an example here. I know that as soon as, I mean, in my way, at television, of course, if Netflix does some changes, that will also affect the what's it called, what you expect from the Swedish television services, because Netflix has it. Oh, it must be. So that's a kind of like a small one. It's the same when Google, if they change search somehow, and those are very small ones. But otherwise, it's you have, one is, of course, going from laptop or desktop to mobile. But still, we have a lot of, like, our editors at work, they work on laptops and don't perhaps consider that it's 80% of the time viewed in a phone. So that's also how you have to design for the mobile experience. Those are software. Then you have other things like that also affects us, like new laws, like the GDPR law that's affecting us. So you have different kinds. You have laws, you have even environment things. I know that at Swedish Television, they had a project on how much we use in power. Can we reduce power in how we develop our services? And so there are so many aspects on how things affect the user experience and what the users are demanding. The thing that they didn't really, that the thing that was sort of like a new delighter, like, oh, this service has this thing, that will be the common demand. Like, oh, but this, why doesn't this have this feature, or this, why is it so difficult? It's the same as when you checked in to if you stayed at a hotel and they didn't have Wi-Fi, it's like, okay, that's fine. But now it's like, they don't have Wi-Fi, but that's standard. So it changes in that aspect as well. So it depends on which aspect you would refer to, because it's a lot of thing affects a lot.
Yeah, and you use very interesting examples, right? Especially in this part of Europe, I really like when you touch in the environmental ones, right? There are lots of efforts to measure how we are, our footprint in the environment, right? And how can we help the world where we live, because we only have one. But I also like that you touch in the Kanu model, right? You talk about the lighters that suddenly are common, right? And it's funny because I usually use these on my workshops to explain people how products evolve, right? And I use the example that Rolls-Royce had electric windows in the 60s. But was Rolls-Royce doing the car for the Queen of England? But today everyone has electrical windows because it becomes a commodity, right? And I also share with you that perhaps the rate of change is there, curiosity is there, but sometimes, especially with software engineers, there is a static vision of the world. And I do believe that companies that are flexible and accept that the rate of change is there are more successful. On the other end, I do believe that you need critical mass. Diversity in skills and experiences and backgrounds, but at the same time, numbers of people to achieve this diversity. If not, we are too homogeneous, right? And the thing there is, did you work with small groups or smaller companies that have more homogeneous problems, right? Because we can have group thinking dynamics. And how do you, in those cases, how do you spark curiosity? Because you don't have critical mass to have more ideas, right?
I haven't worked in small companies for some time. What I can say is a huge difference. I didn't think about diversity in the same way I do today. I sort of didn't know how much it actually affected the work. Now I'm much more aware of it. But I know that, like in diversity, if you know that you are biased, but just being aware of it makes it easier to, at least to for instance, I bring in users from outside. So if we don't have that diversity in the team, we have to bring in people from the outside, even if it's in a really small group. So we bring in users from the outside. I mean, I do that anyway now as well, because even though I work with news and sports and television, it's not. And then, of course, we have all kinds of users, but we are targeting a small group of users. For instance, we at least for some time now, we've been targeting people between 20 and 40 years old. So, I mean, then perhaps not everyone in our team is 20 years old. So I need to bring in people that are younger. So, and that happens all the time. It could be, I work with sports, and none of us in the team are really good at knowing things about sports. I mean, like really, really not knowing. I mean, we do sports, but we don't know much of sports. But that's fine, because we are aware of it. So we don't trust ourselves, but we bring in people that are interested in sports. So that's how we mitigate biases and small group, and when you don't have diversity in the group.
Very interesting. Thanks for sharing. So now, to mitigate my bias, what was the questions about curiosity that I didn't put forward to you? What is the thing that I didn't ask?
Well,
and deserves a discussion here.
I think it's how you evoke. One is how you evoke curiosity. I mean, there are simple things. It's not for me. It's not actually reading a lot of different books. Perhaps it can be small things like just noticing your surroundings, observing your team members, just observing basically anything around you, and step outside from your, well, in my case, it's my apartment, especially in remote times, because this is the difficult for me in, it's more like remote pandemic times, because it's not that I'm actually remote, but it's that I can't really go outside in the same way. So I'm not exposed to, it could be like smells, sounds, just overhearing conversation on the street or in the subway. Those things are just not there. And those are the things that usually evoke curiosity. Just like sitting on a bus, just being there, and you can learn so much just doing that. Now everything is planned, so every meeting, every with a person, connection with a person is planned. There are no like surprise in that sense, and I even noticed when I am surprised. Like I met with my brother-in-law this weekend, and he told me, well, it was something he was going to talk about, so he wanted to share that idea, and I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. I haven't thought about that. I mean, it was like, it wasn't planned. It was just, so that's the evoke curiosity in pandemic times is the difficult one, I believe. But otherwise, it's more how you, curiosity when you have take the perspective of other people. And, well, of course, yes, one important one, the downside of being curious. If you're so curious that you can't focus, you just go to the next thing, then you won't, it will just be a like a sound or a noise. So to actually get the value of your curiosity, you need some sort of focus. And for me, it's being having sort of a goal and that I want to achieve. Like, okay, so, and maybe I use even Pomodoro. If I go for 25 minutes and I mean, maybe I just found something and I go for 25 minutes and then have to reevaluate, is this something I should continue with or not? And it could be even a movie. If you go and you watch a movie and you don't really think it's that good, you think that you could actually do something better with your time or better movie, then you could actually just stop there and go to something else. And another sort of downside, it's not just a downside, but when you're curious, it's there are so many things that you want to learn, do, and haven't done. And it can be sort of stressful. It's like there are always things you can. It is really difficult to get bored. I mean, it's really difficult. And boredom is essential. It is important to get bored, to just have time for reflection. That's also very important for creativity. So being very curious makes it harder to get bored and I get the sense that I'm done because I'm never done. So
I think this is a nice ending, right? The your suggestion also to slow down and reflect, get a little bit bored so you can go to the next thing. And also thanks for the advices about how to control curiosity for things don't go out of hand, right? So we also feel realization, because I know that our brain likes to finish things. Okay, we have a closure. Can we move to the next one? So thanks for all of these practical suggestions that you do on your day-to-day. And also because we have a goal on this podcast that is having episodes about 30 minutes. Now we go to the last question, right? What are the resources that you recommend with regards to this topic that we discussed here today?
I recommend, we haven't touched on it that much, but it's about asking questions. I found this article, it's a really an old article from the 80s in New York Times, but it's called, Izzy, Did You Ask a Good Question Today? It's basically about not giving answers all the time, but actually asking questions. This is a Nobel Prize winner. So it's about how he got to be an scientist. So that I will send you a link to. I also believe that the conscious competence learning model by psychologist Noel Birch. It's a way that in the beginning you are unconscious incompetent, and in the end you are conscious competent. Or it's a really great model to see where you are, what you master and what you you can do, but it takes a long time and slow. But I think it's interesting to know it, because you can use it in many contexts. And an article that I think is great to read concerning this is by Jerry Spohl, and he calls it the flexibility of the four stages of competence. And there you can use it. It can use it for your teams and a lot of situations. I also like another article that I read. It's called Why Boredom is Bad and Good for You by David Robson at BBC. And what else? Well, if you want to be good at asking questions, I should really recommend Just Enough Research by Erica Hall. She also writes a lot of articles. So if you don't want to buy the book, you can find her on talks or posts. And let's see what else. I have a lot of sources, but maybe perhaps that's enough.
Okay, thanks. If any other resources are relevant in the meantime, you can share with me and I will make sure that are in the description of this episode. And thanks to evoke my curiosity on this podcast, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. It's such a great heuristic to talk about.
Thanks.
I love it.
This was really fun. You can follow us on Twitter at @SCraftsPodcast. Visit our website, softwarecraftspodcast.com, or follow our page on LinkedIn. Hope to have you next week.